Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
David Cobb writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter on X at David W. Cobb. Kind enough to join us each and every Wednesday. Cobb, how did the group chat react to Zach Edey and the foul situation?
Oh, it was just utter and sheer outrage over the way Zach Edey was officiated, which you kind of come to expect because it's the way he was officiated all year, and it made every opposing fan base really mad. But then you get the situation where it's Tennessee's fan base, and it's the biggest game in program history, and predictably that storyline and narrative kind of dominated the internet after that game and the group chat.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It is, Mark and I were laughing at how, you know, locally it's like when you realize it's somebody's first Purdue game, and it's like, and we've been hearing these same arguments for 4 years now. Like, it always just funny to like every, it's a reminder that like everyone's Purdue game is sometimes someone's first Purdue game.
Yeah, exactly. And Tennessee fans should have known better because they had played Purdue in November, but I'm going to guess that about 85% of the fan base wasn't locked in on a midweek Maui Invitational game, although that one featured like 51 total fouls. So you should have known. It was all too predictable sort of how that would go down. But, man, I was there courtside in Detroit. And, look, I mean, there were a couple of instances where Zach Edey was going after loose balls and where his elbows were flailing a little bit. And, yeah, you know, he probably could have been called for a couple of more fouls, but by and large, that's exactly what Purdue has been all season long. They shoot far more free throws than their opponents. They foul less than their opponents. And, you know, to Zach Edey's credit, he is relatively disciplined with the way he defends and the way he plays because he's so important to what they do. If he's out there picking up senseless fouls, it's going to kill Purdue. I mean, it would kill them if he was regularly picking up 3 fouls and a half. The fact that he doesn't do that allows him to play 30-plus minutes a game, and it's a part of why they're at the Final Four.
Would you be surprised if we don't see Purdue and UConn on Monday?
I would be surprised. Those two are heavy favorites, rightfully so. I think the matchups are pretty favorable, and you know that they've been the two most dominant teams in the sport all season. I mean, Houston was kind of right there with them as well. But yeah, UConn and Purdue, it almost feels inevitable. And we'll see what DJ Burns has to say about it. We'll see if Alabama can maybe knock down 23 three-pointers or something. But, you know, and unless Burns has the game of his life or, you know, Zach Edey sprains an ankle or something, right? Like, that's what we're headed towards. It's going to be Purdue and UConn.
If it's not one, who do you think of the two? Because I think, the spreads are 11.5 and 9.5. So, I mean, they're roughly double-digit spreads. If one doesn't win, who do you think it would be?
Yeah, I think NC State probably has a little bit better chance against Purdue. I mean, Alabama's offense is lethal. Still not a huge believer in that defense, especially against a UConn team that's just in utter destruction mode. Unfortunately for Alabama, they profile kind of similar to Illinois. And Illinois just got taken out behind the woodshed by UConn because Alabama, much like Illinois, is a lot of threes, some five out, not a ton of heft on the interior, like to go fast, rate highly in offensive efficiency, but really pretty lackluster on defense. And UConn just had its way with a team like that. And now you get Purdue and NC State, and with all the confidence NC State has coming into this game, Purdue is not as complete of a team, not as talented of a team all around as UConn is. And so if one of the two is somewhat susceptible, I would say it's Purdue, but I'm not predicting NC State over Purdue. I'm just thinking of the two games, that's the one that probably has a chance to be a little closer.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I go back and forth because I agree. Like, my eyeballs say, all right, which team do I trust the most? I trust UConn the most, but it's something about the matchup with Bama. It's like, all right, what if Bama makes 25 three, you know, takes 45 threes, makes 25 of them? We have not seen UConn shoot the ball particularly well, which that's part of what I think makes it so impressive, considering how much they're dominating, is the fact that it's not just look at, you know, when Nova would go pop a shot mode and kill everybody, three-point shooting was a big part of it. We're watching just smoke folks by not allowing people to score and then them kind of meticulously running their offense.
Yeah, and UConn's three-point shooting defense is pretty solid. I mean, some of that is luck. Some of that is you can't control it. But there is some scheme and some strategy and some skill associated with defending the three-point line. And part of it is when you've got a 7'2" guy down in the paint, you can be overly aggressive with running your opponent off the three-point line, because are you really that worried that they're going to get to the rim and be able to score? No. I mean, Donovan Klingon is down there, right? So you run the opponent off the three-point line, you funnel them into the paint, and then all of a sudden they got to score over a guy with something like a 7'8" wingspan who might be a top-5 pick in the draft. All right, good luck, you know. And so Alabama likes the three ball. They like to score at the rim. UConn is skilled at kind of taking away both those things. And so you're going to see Mark Sears take shots from even further out. Maybe it's going to test Alabama's range. Are we going to get another big game from Jaren Stevenson after he had the game of his life? I don't know that I trust all those the confluence of factors that would have to come together for Alabama to really compete in this game. I mean, they're explosive offensively, but they're going to need to have the game of their season offensively, and then also have an answer on defense. And so that's just a tall order, man. I don't know. It's they're the highest scoring team in the country, but this could be a 105-92 type of situation potentially.
Well, no, it's funny you mentioned that defensive approach. Have you watched the Mark documentary yet?
The Gasol one.
No, I have not.
Okay, it's on the Grizzlies whatever YouTube page. Carve out 2 hours, just because you're going to need to go back and rewind a few times, because there's a lot of those memories that give you the warm and fuzzies. But it's funny that you mentioned that, because T.A. even talked about, you know, part of the reason why Mike and I could be so handsy on the ball is because if they got biased, they had to go deal with Mark. And it's like the same thing. I feel like that's kind of what UConn's doing.
Yeah, no doubt. Having that elite-level interior rim protector is something that really – it sets UConn apart in this bracket, even from Zach Edey, because Zach Edey at seven foot four, he's produced good as a team defensively. But Zach Edey, for a man of his size, doesn't actually block a ton of shots. He doesn't have the lift. I would wonder almost if Donovan Klingon actually have a larger wingspan. We'll find that out at the combine. But Donovan Klingon is actually a better rim protector and shot blocker than Zach Edey. He's not as skilled offensively, he's better in that way, and so that sets UConn apart in this matchup with Alabama, and it sets them apart from a lot of teams in college basketball right now, because the way Donovan Klingon is playing, man, there's really not an answer for what he's got, and that Klingon Edey matchup, man, if we get it, that's it's must see, right? And like I don't get me wrong, it'd be amazing if NC State somehow ended up in the title game. Like, that'd be a fun story. Alabama getting there so unexpectedly would be interesting. But I think Edey versus Klingon would probably be the best way to decide who the best team was in college basketball this season.
All right. So, obviously, we're all rooting for the it feels like, especially because Jeffrey and I are going to be at FedEx Forum for the Gasol jersey retirement, kind of secretly hoping the Final Four goes as Vegas thinks it's going to go, so I don't feel like I missed like a great Final Four. And then we get a national championship game Monday night that's must-see. But more importantly, the reason why, for the next couple months, the biggest reason why we have you on this show, David Cobb, is because you're in charge of CBSSports.com's transfer portal rankings, all right? Penny's got to fill a lot of spots, all right? And Jeffrey, I believe last time we spoke with David about this, his list, we were only at like 10 or 15 names. He's now all the way up to top 50.
We were at 30 last time.
Oh, 30 last time? Okay, well, now it's up to 50. The newest addition last night, Jonnell Davis.
I wonder where those FAU kids are going.
From what I understand, it is not, especially with the big guy, not a done deal for Michigan. Okay. Not a done deal. But you've got Jonnell Davis, he enters the transfer portal yesterday and vaults up to number one on your transfer portal list. You got Tucker DeVry. DeVries, 2.
Wonder where he's going.
Well, he's already going to West. He's already committed to West Virginia. Zeke Mayo, 3, from South Dakota State. He's already going to Kansas. A.J. Storr from Wisconsin is the highest available transfer. And then number 5, Vladislav Golden, the big guy from FAU, is number 5. Then you got Cliff Omarui from Rutgers, number 6. Javon Porter from Pepperdine, number 7. Kevin Miller from Wake Forest, number 8. Tony Perkins from Iowa, number 9. Michi Johnson from South Carolina, number 10. He just picked Ohio State. I'm trying to find the highest number, highest available transfer that I believe Memphis is sort of involved with. Maybe Tyron Lawrence from Vanderbilt, who they were after last year. You have him at 17. Gibson Jimerson from St. Louis, the shooter from St. Louis, he's been connected with Memphis. You've got him at 19. Doug McDaniel at 21, the Michigan point guard.
He committed today.
Where'd he commit?
One second. Hold on. I'll tell you. I just saw it. I have not updated that piece yet, but McDaniel is off the market.
And I believe you got Malik Dia. I believe he's committed somewhere too, right?
No, Malik Dia is not committed yet, okay. But the other Belmont kid is Jacoby Gillespie.
Gotcha.
He is going to Maryland. And, Doug McDaniel is going to Kansas State. So you're starting to see guys come off the board. Not a ton. I mean, they're still in my top 50, I'd say, I mean, probably 75% are still uncommitted. And there are still more guys to come. This portal window is still open for about 3 more weeks. Which means, you know, guys have up until May the 1st to get into the portal, and there is no firm deadline on when they must commit once they're in. So that's an important thing to remember, is you'll see that late surge right around that May 1 deadline. These guys are getting pulled in a lot of different directions. Mm-hmm. Agents are whispering to them to go. And, you got a team like Memphis.
Let's be real. There's going to be a lot of deals made in Phoenix over the next 5 days. That becomes a convention of college basketball.
I also feel like the names that we've seen committed, you can go ahead and identify. All right, who got tampered with?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Memphis, so on this list, just for fans, Dane Danger, who reportedly visited Memphis yesterday, the Illinois big man, you've got him at 39 on your transfer mm-hmm. list. And then another mm-hmm. name that's been heavily attached to Memphis so far, PJ Haggerty from Tulsa, you've got number 47 on your transfer list. So, it shows PJ Haggerty was really good this year for Tulsa. And the fact that he's 47 is very interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this list,
in terms of what's available.
The list could be 150 at this point. And maybe once the Final Four is over, I break it out to 100.
Don't give yourself more work. Come on.
Well, this thing does numbers, man. You wouldn't believe it.
Hell yeah, it does.
Oh, I believe it.
Hell yeah, it does.
But the thing about
Cobb, you could add a photo gallery,
Oh, hey,
a few other ways to get some clicks out of that bad boy.
I know the tricks. But Haggerty, for example, there's a lot of high-volume mid-major scorers, and it's sometimes difficult to parse out which ones are going to translate to a higher level and which ones won't. Maybe some people think 47 is low for Haggerty. I think it's a really generous ranking, and here's why I have P.J. Haggerty ranked and why he would be maybe attractive for a team like Memphis. It's because he has 3 years left to play.
Yeah.
So he's got time to develop. I mean, this guy showed very little outside shooting this past season at Tulsa. He did most of his damage inside the arc. Mm-hmm. And now you think about him going to a program, having 3 years left to play, and maybe adding the three-pointer to his arsenal. Like, that could make him a potential conference player of the year type of guy down the line. And so that's one thing I look at is, how many years do you have left? What could you still add to your bag in that time? And then the other one you mentioned is Dane Danger, which is interesting to me that Memphis would be interested in him because of the way he plays. He is more of a traditional big man, and he kind of got pushed out of the Illinois rotation a little bit this year because they wanted to go fast. They wanted to go five out. They wanted Coleman Hawkins at the five hanging out on the three-point line, and it's like, all right, we kind of saw where the Jordan Brown thing went with Memphis.
Interesting.
do we want Dane Danger? He's a good player, but are we actually going to tailor our system to make it to where he would fit here?
Yeah, fascinating stuff. It's like, I mean, we're up to what? It's like 1,100 in the portal, and there's probably...
I thought it's higher than that. I mean, I think it's going to end up over 2,000.
For sure, yeah. I mean, with the way it is, where you can, everyone can, you know, ultimately there's no restrictions this year. There's no like, well, if he transfers, he's still got to get a waiver. There's none of that this year. Fascinating stuff. And Memphis is going to have to fill. I mean, it feels like they're going to have to get at least seven guys, right? I think that's what it'll probably end up being at the minimum.
Yeah.
Like seven guys out of the portal and maybe more. I mean, I guess you can get some late, you know, late signees high school wise, maybe. Interesting. Have you noticed anything, David, in terms of are we seeing any trends in terms of, it feels like you can't ignore the transfer portal, but it feels like it is really difficult to be really good if you're just relying on the transfer portal. But have you picked up on any trends? Is there anything changing in your mind in terms of what you're seeing from the early indications of how people are treating the portal?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of really good big men this year. I mean, a lot of guys that I have ranked pretty highly who are centers and who are bigs. And so, you know, that could sort of force teams, if you want to go after the best available, then that could force some teams to kind of go more big man oriented. So if you're Memphis and you're in on Dane Danger because you think he's one of the best players you could get, then you need to tailor your system to fit the way that he plays. And that sort of makeup of the portal could still change. There's plenty of good guards out there, but a larger contingent of my top 50 are bigs than usual. And so that's an interesting phenomenon because, you know, it could sway some of these programs into playing a certain type of way that maybe they haven't in the past, if their goal is just merely to, you know, grab the best talent out there. So that'll still change and evolve over the coming weeks. I think there's still going to be some rock star guards who get in that we haven't seen yet. So this thing is moving, it's changing. And I think a lot of coaches now understand that you got to have the right mix. It's got to be a mix of guys who know your system and know your culture and have been in your program. But then you got to supplement through the portal, and you got to have at least some kind of a freshman class coming in, even if it's not a 5 or 6 man class, even just having two guys who can come in and sort of, you know, help you build out your program. I mean, I think that's still really important as well.
Cobb, we appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, David.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.